All right, so welcome to another deep dive with us. You know how we do things around here. We take a bunch of complex legal stuff, and we try to break it down for you, like a digestible takeaway, right?
Right.
So for this deep dive, we are looking at a case from 2013 called Hill v. Garda CL Northwest Inc. It's a Washington State Supreme Court decision.
Yeah.
And we've got like our typical deep dive pack. You know, we've got our guidance notes and a couple of case briefs, and even like a perplexity analysis on this thing. So I think what's really like fascinating about this case is it really gets at like this question of, when does an arbitration clause, you know, those things you see in contracts all the time, right? When does one of those become like so unfair that it's basically like unconscionable?
Yeah.
Like, is there a line? And what does that mean for employees? I think all of us have signed a contract at some point and thought, wait, is this even really fair?
Oh yeah, for sure. This case is a great example of how these arbitration agreements can be a kind of a tricky area, for employees especially. So, just to set the stage, the case involves employees of this company, Garda CL Northwest, which is an armored truck company. Makes sense, right? Garda Armored Trucks.
Yeah.
So these employees, they filed a lawsuit claiming that Garda was denying them, get this, their legally required meal and rest breaks.
Oh, wow. So like basic wage and hour stuff.
Exactly, like things that are protected under Washington state law, they're supposed to get these breaks.
Right.
But here's the thing, Garda had this arbitration clause in their labor agreements, the ones the employees had to sign as a condition of employment.
Yeah. I'm seeing where this is going.
And the thing is, these clauses are becoming increasingly common in all sorts of contracts these days. But the one in this case had some super specific and honestly pretty restrictive provisions that
Oh.
ended up being like the whole crux of the legal battle.
So it wasn't that the employees couldn't bring their claims at all. It was more like the way Garda had set up this arbitration process was the problem.
Yeah, you got it. And this all starts in the trial court, right?
Yeah.
So the trial court actually certified the case as a class action,
Oh, interesting.
which is significant, right?
Yeah.
Because it acknowledged that there were potentially lots of employees who were being affected by the same alleged
Right,
violations.
that makes sense.
And then the trial court ordered arbitration, but importantly, they said it could proceed on a class-wide basis.
Okay, so all the employees could basically like band together in this arbitration process.
Yeah, exactly. That was the idea anyway. But then things took a turn.
Oh, I bet. Court of Appeals.
And bingo. The Court of Appeals agreed that the arbitration clause was generally enforceable, but they weren't cool with the class-wide part. They said, nope, each employee has to go it alone. Individual arbitration.
Oh, wow. So that's a huge difference, right? Going from one big class action to potentially like tons of individual cases.
Right. It would have been a logistical nightmare for those employees and probably super expensive too.
So what happened next? Did the employees just give up at that point?
Oh no, they weren't done yet.
Okay.
They took it all the way to the Washington State Supreme Court. And their argument was basically, look, this whole arbitration clause is so unfair, so one-sided, it shouldn't even be enforced at all. The legal term for that, by the way, is unconscionable.
Unconscionable.
Yeah.
So they were saying it was like so bad it shocked the conscience of the court.
Exactly.
And what did the Supreme Court say?
They sided with the employees. They said, yeah, this clause is no good. We're invalidating the whole thing.
Wow. So let's dig into the weeds here a little bit. What exactly did the court find so unconscionable about this clause? What were the specifics?
All right. So the main issue here is something called substantive unconscionability, which is a mouthful, I know. But basically, it means the court is looking at the actual terms of the contract and asking if they're so unfairly skewed in favor of one party, in this case, Garda, that it just can't stand.
So they're looking for like really extreme stuff.
Right. Not just, oh, this part's a little bit unfair, but like, whoa, this is crazy. No way, this is okay.
Okay, got it.
And there's another layer to this too, because we've got this thing called the Federal Arbitration Act, the FAA. You probably heard of it. It's a big deal.
Yeah, I've definitely heard it thrown around. But to be honest, I'm not totally clear on what it does.
Well, basically, the FAA says that courts should generally enforce arbitration agreements. Like, there's a presumption that if you sign an agreement to arbitrate, you got to stick to it.
Interesting.
But, and this is a big but, the FAA doesn't completely override state contract law. States can still have their own rules about things like unconscionability in contracts, as long as those rules aren't specifically aimed at just arbitration agreements. So in this case, Washington State has its own general rule about unconscionability that applies to all kinds of contracts, not just arbitration ones.
So the court was basically saying that GARDA was trying to use this arbitration agreement as a loophole to get around the state's wage laws.
Right. They were trying to have their cake and eat it, too.
So let's talk specifics. What exactly were these super unfair terms that the court found in GARDA's arbitration clause?
Well, first of all, there was this insane deadline for filing claims. You ready for this?
Yeah, hit me.
14 days. That's it. 2 weeks.
2 weeks? Are you serious? To file a legal claim? That seems next to impossible.
Right. And keep in mind, the normal statute of limitations for wage claims in Washington state is like 3 years. So that's a massive difference. The court saw this 14-day deadline as totally unreasonable. It's like saying, oh, you think your employer might be breaking the law, better act fast or you're out of luck.
Yeah. Like, how are you even supposed to know that you've been wronged in that time frame?
Exactly. And then it gets worse.
Oh, there's more.
Oh, yeah. There were also these caps on back pay. So even if you somehow managed to file your claim within those 2 weeks, the agreement said you could only recover like 2 to 4 months worth of back pay, max.
Regardless of how long the violation had been going on.
Exactly.
So even if GARDA had been denying breaks for like years, the employees could only get a couple months worth of compensation.
That's what the agreement said, yeah. Which, of course, totally contradicts Washington state law, which allows for full recovery of all unpaid wages.
Right, right. Makes sense. So super short deadline, limited back pay. Anything else?
One more big one. This arbitration clause had a fee-splitting provision, meaning the employees would have to share the costs of the arbitration with GARDA.
Oh, wow. That's brutal. Especially for people who are already saying they've been underpaid, right?
Exactly. And arbitration can get expensive. We're talking potentially thousands of dollars in fees. The court basically said that requiring employees, who are often low-wage workers to begin with, to shoulder that kind of financial burden just to have their case heard was totally unreasonable.
So the Washington Supreme Court really laid out why this clause was a problem.
Yeah, like they hit all the main points, the crazy short deadline, the caps on back pay, the fee-sharing requirement. It was pretty clear-cut. They were like, nope, this is not okay.
Now, one thing that stuck out to me in the materials was that the trial court actually allowed for class-wide arbitration, but then the Court of Appeals said it had to be individual. Why did the Washington Supreme Court even weigh in on that if they were already throwing out the entire clause?
Good question. The Supreme Court actually ended up siding with the trial court on the class arbitration issue. They said, yeah, in this case, with all these employees alleging basically the same kind of wage violation, class arbitration makes way more sense.
Right, yeah. I can see that.
They basically said that forcing everyone to go through individual arbitration would be a huge burden on the employees, and it might even let the company off the hook for some of their wrongdoing.
It's interesting, right? Because in some cases, arbitration can be a good thing. It can be a faster and less expensive way to resolve disputes than going through a full-blown trial. But I guess, like anything, it can be abused.
Exactly. It's all about balance, right? Mm-hmm. This case really highlights the fact that employers can't just use arbitration clauses as a way to, like, silence their employees or avoid accountability.
So what are the big takeaways here for employers in Washington state? Like, if I'm an employer listening to this, what do I need to keep in mind when I'm drafting contracts?
Well, I think the main lesson from the GARDA case is that your arbitration clauses need to be fair. You can't use them to strip employees of their basic rights or make it practically impossible for them to pursue their claims. You've got to make sure there's a reasonable deadline for filing, that there are no crazy caps on damages, and that you're not putting an undue financial burden on your employees.
Right. Like, don't try to be sneaky and use arbitration to get around the law.
Exactly. And this doesn't just apply to wage and hour cases either. This principle of unconscionability applies to all sorts of contracts.
And what about from the employee's perspective? What should they be looking out for?
I think the big takeaway for employees is that they don't have to just blindly sign whatever's put in front of them. If you're asked to sign an agreement that includes an arbitration clause, you know, don't be afraid to ask questions, to push back a little bit. If something seems unfair, doesn't make sense, you have the right to speak up. And if you're not sure, it's always a good idea to talk to a lawyer and get some advice before you sign anything.
Yeah, that's good advice. Know your rights.
Exactly.
There was one more thing in the materials that I wanted to touch on.
Sure, go for it.
The idea of severability and the court's decision not to just, like, strike down bad parts of the clause and leave the rest.
Oh, right. So severability is this legal concept where a court can basically say, okay, this part of the contract is no good, but the rest of it is fine.
So they could have just taken out, like, the 14-day deadline and the caps on back pay and left the rest of the arbitration agreement in place.
Theoretically, yes.
But they didn't do that here.
Nope. The court said that in this case, the unconscionable parts of the clause were so intertwined with the whole thing that they couldn't be separated. It's like, you know, if you have a cake that's totally burnt, you can't just scrape off the burnt part and pretend the rest of it's fine. The whole thing is ruined.
Yeah, I get it.
And there's another important point related to that, this idea of the court's gateway authority. Basically, when there's a question about whether an arbitration agreement is even valid in the first place, like, when one party is claiming unconscionability, it's the court, not the arbitrator, who gets to decide that.
So the court gets to act as like the gatekeeper, making sure that the arbitration process is fair before anyone even has to go through it.
Exactly. That's a crucial safeguard, especially when you have these situations where there's a real power imbalance between the parties, like with an employer and an employee.
So to wrap it all up, the Hill v. Garda case is a really great example of how courts can step in and protect employees when they're facing unfair arbitration clauses.
Right. It shows that arbitration can be a useful tool, but it can't be used to trample on people's rights.
Well, I think this has been a really insightful deep dive into the Garda case. Really makes you think about all those contracts we sign without really thinking about them too much, huh?
For sure. And it highlights the importance of knowing your rights as an employee.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, in a world where everything is a contract, it's more important than ever to understand what you're agreeing to. So for all of you listeners out there, I think this case raises some important questions. Like, how can you make sure you're not accidentally signing away your rights? And what role should the courts play in keeping things fair when it comes to these kinds of agreements?
Great questions. It's definitely something to think about.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, this has been another deep dive. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Until next time.